ಭಗವತ್ಯುತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೆ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ದೇವಕೀನಂದನಾಯ ಚ ನಂದಗೋಪಕುಮಾರಾಯ ಗೋವಿಂದಾಯ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ.
ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತಂ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ನಂಬರ್ 35.
ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸರ್ವಭೂತೇಷು ಲಕ್ಷಿತ ಸ್ವಾತ್ಮನಾಹರಿಃ ದೃಶ್ಯೈರ್ಬುದ್ಧ್ಯಾದಿಭಿರ್ದ್ರಷ್ಟಾ ಲಕ್ಷಣೈರನುಮಾಪಕೈಃ. ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸರ್ವಭೂತೇಷು ಲಕ್ಷಿತ ಸ್ವಾತ್ಮನಾಹರಿಃ ದೃಶ್ಯೈರ್ಬುದ್ಧ್ಯಾದಿಭಿರ್ದ್ರಷ್ಟಾ ಲಕ್ಷಣೈರನುಮಾಪಕೈಃ. ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸರ್ವಭೂತೇಷು ಲಕ್ಷಿತ ಸ್ವಾತ್ಮನಾಹರಿಃ ದೃಶ್ಯೈರ್ಬುದ್ಧ್ಯಾದಿಭಿರ್ದ್ರಷ್ಟಾ ಲಕ್ಷಣೈರನುಮಾಪಕೈಃ. ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸರ್ವಭೂತೇಷು ದೃಶ್ಯೈರ್ಬುದ್ಧ್ಯಾದಿಭಿರ್ದ್ರಷ್ಟಾ ಲಕ್ಷಣೈರನುಮಾಪಕೈ ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸರ್ವಭೂತೇಷು ಲಕ್ಷಿತ ಸ್ವಾತ್ಮನಾ ಹರಿ
ವೈಷ್ಣವೀಸ್
ಭೂತೇಶು ಭಗವಾನ್ ಸರ್ವಭೂತೇಶು ಲಕ್ಷಣ
ಭಗವಾನ್ the personality of Godhead,
sarva,
all,
bhuteshu,
in the living entities,
lakshitah,
is visible,
svaatmana,
along with the self,
harihi,
the Lord,
drashyaihi,
by what is seen,
buddhi adibihi,
by intelligence,
drashta,
one who sees,
lakshanaihi,
by different signs,
anumapakaihi,
by hypothesis. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki, the personality of Godhead Lord Sri Krishna is in every living being, along with the individual soul, and this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So purport is a very long purport. So I will speak a part of the purport with some explanation, and we will try to cover as much as possible of the purport. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuhuvan Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamahyam Dadati Swapadantika Vandeham Shri Guruh Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunathan Vitham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnapadaya Krishna Prashthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today we all missed the wonderful opportunity of hearing from His Grace Bhrat Maradanga Prabhu this morning, because his health wasn't so good, he asked me to give. So with the blessings of all my superiors, I would like to say something on this wonderful purport, where Prabhupada is explaining answer to a very important question, which he himself raises in the beginning of the purport. And it's a very enlightening purport. You just don't need a class at all. You just read the purport and the class will be over. It is so wonderful. Some purports of Prabhupada are like that. Purport by His Divine Grace is the Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. The general argument of the common man is that since the Lord is not visible to our eyes, how can one either surrender unto Him or render transcendental loving service unto Him? To such a common man, here is a practical suggestion given by Srila Shukadeva Goswami as to how can one perceive the Supreme Lord by reason and perception. Actually, the Lord is not perceivable by our present materialized senses. But when one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude, there is a revelation by the Lord's mercy. And such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. He can perceive that intelligence in the form direction of the Paramatma, plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. The presence of Paramatma in everyone's company is not very difficult to realize, even for the common man. And then he goes on to explain the procedure. So he is, Prabhupada says here, The question is, often people argue that we cannot see the Supreme Lord, then how can we surrender to Him? So I used to often have this question also about when we offer obeisances to someone, it is often said that we should see the super soul in the heart of that person and we should offer obeisances. Then what about the person himself? Are we not offering obeisances to him, the living being? That is also true, we offer to the living being also. But by seeing the super soul in the heart of everyone, one can understand that the living being is not alone, he is accompanied by the Lord in the heart. We are offering obeisance to the Lord also. So how to see these things? They may appear to be very abstract for us, these kind of sublime truths. But in this purport, Prabhupada makes it very easy to understand. If we go step by step by step, very beautifully we can understand how the super soul's presence can be understood. In the beginning, Prabhupada opens the purport by saying that we have materialized senses. In Bhagavatam, the words kadindriyaihi is used, impure senses. This word is used by Yayati Maharaj. He says, vidadanopi natrapyat sarvabhauma kadindriyaihi, he says. Evam varsha sahasrani manashashtair manasukam vidadanopi natrapyat sarvabhauma kadindriyaihi. He is saying, thousands of years I try to enjoy in this world, but I only obtained all suffering. So, he says, Sarvabhauma. The word is very significant because I am the king of the whole world. There is nothing in this world which is not within my reach. Everything is in my control in this world except happiness. I got everything in this world, but I couldn't get happiness from them. Sarvabhauma Kadindriya. Why? Because I have Kadi Indriya, he says. Kadi Indriya means impure senses. So, struggling to enjoy with impure senses will lead to more and more suffering. As Prabhupada explains in Ishopanishad, when we have diseased body, trying to enjoy with the diseased body will cause more suffering. Like if I have a high fever, somebody, in those days when our devotees used to get sick and go to the sick room, many devotees would treat them like children, go to them and say, Prabhu, please take care, please take rest. And some devotees would take a big plate of Rajabhog Mahaprasad to go and give them, Prabhu, you are very sick, please take. Because Mahaprasad makes any devotee become very pleased. So I used to scold them, this fellow is already having fever, and if you feed him Mahaprasad, he will get more fever. If you feed them a plate full of big prasad, because they are unfit to eat in a diseased state. And they are supposed to be eating something very little, or drink only some soups. When they become healthy, then they can eat a plate full of prasad. In the same manner, the living entity with its impure senses, the more he struggles to enjoy, he cannot enjoy. And not only that, with impure senses we cannot see the Lord also. The more we enjoy with the impure senses, our senses become gross and blunt. And they become, one can become crazy. Prabhupada will say in one place in the purport, like if somebody, it's not that these four regulated principles that we follow, sometimes materialists see the devotees following these principles and they think these foolish people are deprived of so much enjoyment of this world. They think like that. Actually, if we observe carefully those who indulge in sense gratification, they have to go to psychiatric patient over a period of time when they go on trying to enjoy this material world. I have seen of a case of a man who was freely indulging in illicit sex with different women, and over a period of time he became a psychic patient. He went practically mad. One loses stability of one's mind. So in this way we can see that the senses become more and more gross and blunt and impure as one indulges in sense gratification. And what is the solution given here? If one wants to see Krishna, as it is said, Atha Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahyam Indriyai. With gross senses we cannot see Krishna. Then how can we see? Sevon Mukehi Jihvado Swayameva Saratyada. So By entering service, when one acquires that attitude more and more, then a stage comes when one can see Krishna directly. Gopalabhatta Goswami's desire to render service was so great, so immense. He saw that some businessmen came and gave clothes and jewelry and ornaments and everything to the Goswamis. And he was watching it. He thought, how nice if I had a deity. I only have Shalikram Shilas. If only I wish I have a beautiful deity of Krishna to whom I can put up all these dresses and ornaments. So it was a Narsingha Chaturdashi night. And the next day morning when he got up, he found a beautiful deity of Krishna had sprouted from the Shaligram, Shilas. Immediately called all the Goswamis. They all came to see. Everyone was excited. In fact, that small deity of Radha Raman, it had the face of Radha Gopinath and the body, chest of Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Govind, and the lotus feet of Radha Madan Mohan, like that. All the three prominent deities of the Goswamis were manifest in Radha Raman. And then he could dress. So the desire of the devotee to serve the Lord, when it is so intense, then the Lord provides facility immediately. Lord becomes manifest to the devotee. Same way, there are innumerable pastimes of how the Lord manifests himself to the devotee by seeing the intense desire of the devotee. So Prabhupada is saying that the Lord is not perceivable by our material senses, but when one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude, there is a revelation by the Lord's mercy. And such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. And the Prabhupada goes on to explain the procedure. Now, how to see the Lord in the heart, or the Paramatma in our heart? Prabhupada is giving a procedure here. One can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. Like all of us are aware that I am existing, correct? Is there anyone here, sitting here, who doesn't know that he is existing, he or she is existing? Anybody has a little doubt whether I am existing or not? Even a materialist, materialistic scientist, Descartes, he said, cogito ergo sum, which means I am aware that I am existing. But a computer is not aware that it is existing. We are aware of our existence. So, even amongst psychologists in study, this is a very, very vital aspect of the study which talks about the identity, I. We have the experience of, or the awareness of our existence. So Prabhupada logically develops the purport. You will see step by step. This is the first thing he says. We know we exist. He may not feel it very abruptly, but by using a little intelligence, he can feel that he is not the body. He can feel that the hand, the leg, the head, the hair, and the limbs are all his bodily parts and parcels. But as such, the hand, the leg, the head, etc. cannot be identified with his self. Therefore, just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate his self from other things that he sees. So the natural conclusion is that the living being, either man or beast, is the seer, and he sees besides himself all other things. So there is a difference between the seer and the seen. Like we see a pujari is doing aarti or is doing chamar. So you may only see the hand moving the chamar up and down from here. Now who is doing chamar? So you can say the hand is doing chamar, or the wrist portion of the hand is doing chamar. Or you can say the hand is doing chamar, or the hand connected to the body, and the body is doing chamar. So when you carefully observe, although the body of the pujari, it's made up of all the elements, different metal elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and all those things. We know in that body there is a spirit soul who is seva unmukh, seva unmukhehi jihvado. He has the desire to render service to the Lord. So that is why he is moving the chamar, is rendering service. So in the same manner, one has to see the Atma Tattva, or the presence of the spirit soul behind the material body. Like when you see a dog, one has to see, oh, here is a living entity who has misused his free will, due to which he is cast into the body of a dog. Or when one sees a gentle brahmana, here is a living being who has used his free will in the right way, so he is placed in the body of a brahmana. Although pandita samadarshana, we see the quality of the soul in all the bodies is the same, still externally the bodies are different. And also the material elements cannot function on their own. The body is made up of flesh and bone and all those different substances. They cannot move from place to place because we have experience. Like this table is a material element. Can it move on its own? Or the mic, can it move on its own? No. But the hand is moving. How? Because there is some spirit behind it which is moving it. One can understand. In those days, I used to go to Juhu temple. There was one Rasaraj Prabhu there. One of the early days. He used to give such amazing logic to understand the difference between body and soul. These were some of the arguments I heard in the very early days, which I deeply remember even today. So we were on the third or fourth floor. So I was telling him, how can you prove that the soul exists? I was asking him. So he said, very simple. He said, there was some ball or something. He said, if you pick up this ball and throw it down, will anything happen? He asked. I said, nothing will happen. The ball will go right down to the ground. He said, if I pick you up and I tie you with a rope and I throw you down, what will happen? And then he said, of course, when I throw you down, you will try to escape. Even if I tie your hands and legs very tightly, at least there will be exertion from inside, isn't it? Trying to break apart the ropes and catch. He said, it's very likely that you may catch one of the lofts and you may save your body from crashing like a tomato to the ground, isn't it? You will catch and you will try to safeguard yourself. So where is the tendency for defending yourself coming from? He asked. That comes from the presence of the soul in the body. Dead inanimate matter doesn't defend at all, isn't it? Yeah. Like the other day, we saw a worm. To pick up the worm, we just touched it with a stick. Immediately the worm withdrew itself. Fear, out of fear, somebody is going to kill me. So where is that tendon ability coming from? It's coming from the presence of the living entity inside the body. So the material element has no ability to move on its own or do anything on its own. It is just dead. So we can see, that's what Prabhupada is saying here, there's a clear-cut difference between the material elements and the Atma or the soul, living entity, the Chetan and the Jada. And then he's explaining. Now, so here he concluded, he said, there is a difference between the seer and the seen. This is another thing. For example, I am the soul living in this body and I am observing many things with my eyes. And I am also perceiving things by Shabda, Sparsha, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha. With these things I am perceiving many things. Taste and seeing and touch and smell and everything. That means I am observing and observable things are different from me. Now by a little use of intelligence we can also readily agree that the living being who sees the things beyond himself by ordinary vision has no power to see or to move independently. All our ordinary actions and perceptions depend on various forms of energy supplied to us by nature in various combinations. Our senses of perception and senses of action, which means Jnanendriyas and Karmendriyas, Prabhupada is giving the list, and our five perceptive senses, that is the so the five Jnanendriyas, Karmendriyas and Tanmatras, everything is explained. Prabhupada is giving the long list there. And after that he is saying, and also our three subtle senses, namely mind, intelligence and ego. 13 senses in all. They are all supplied to us by various arrangements of gross or subtle forms of natural energy. And it is equally evident that our objects of perception are nothing but the products of inexhaustible permutations and combinations of the forms taken by natural energy. As this conclusively proves that the ordinary living being has no independent power of perception or of motion, and as we undoubtedly feel our existence being conditioned by nature's energy, we conclude that he who sees is spirit, and that the senses as well as the objects of perception are material. The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of materially conditioned existence. That will come later. Okay, up to this point, Prabhupada is explaining. Basically, in these sentences, what he says is we have eyes, nose, ear, tongue and skin. We also have the hands, legs, anus, rectum and speech, the five Jnanendriyas, Karmendriyas. And we have the five objects for the senses, for each of the senses we have. So all these are there, and the seer or the soul, which is present in the body, he is using all these senses in order to experience the world, he is saying. Like we are seeing through the eyes. So we are not the eyes. Why? For example, somebody is blind, we can place an eyeball and make them see things, right? Correct? Or for example, if somebody's eyes are plugged out due to some accident or something, and another eye is put up there, a person doesn't become different. Or you transplant the heart of a person. You remove one heart and put another heart. Does a person become changed person? He has a transformed heart now. Isn't it? No, he's the same person. Because the heart or the eyes which are transplanted, they are simply like organs. And the soul within is different inside. And we are taking the aid of these senses in order to perceive the world around. Now when we say senses, these are not the senses, like this ear, this is not the ear, this is not the eyes. Actually the five abilities of perception, they are there in the subtle body. They are inbuilt in the subtle body. Shrotram chakshus parshanam cha rasanam granam eva cha adishtayam anashchayam vishyan upasevate. So these five, ability to see is not in the eyeball. Ability to see is in the subtle body. So similarly for hearing also, for every one of them. And our subtle body is flavored with our mentality. That's why the subtle body is called as the body of desires. It's called as the body of desires. It's colored, blue color or yellow color or red color. In the same manner, we have a mentality also that is carried, vayo gandha nivashayat, like the fragrance carried by the air. Similarly, our mentality is also, the soul along with his subtle body, with a certain mentality is carried, and the bodies are awarded accordingly, and then one gets a pig's body or an angel's body or whatever. Sada sad yoni janmasu, we get like that. But most important point I was making here is, we are utilizing all these things to see, and we are not independent. That's the most important thing. For example, why is the sun considered the adipati for the eyes, presiding deity for the eyes? Because without the aid of the sun, we can't even see our own hand. We can't see others. And all the light emitting objects, they are all deriving their light from the sun only. They have, even in science we study how all the different light emitting objects, they absorb the sunlight, they may go into the ground, when we again dig them out, then we may burn and they may produce fire. But they have originally absorbed the light from where? From sun only. That is why sun is the presiding deity for the eyes. Now the eyes are useless without the sun. We can say, I may say I have eyes, but I can't see anything without the aid of the sun. In this way, we are an ordinary living entity. We have no ability to, we are just taking one sense. We don't have the ability to see anything without the aid of the sun. We need an external agent. Similarly, all of our senses are also defective. As we know, we have the four defects, which also shows that the living entity is living in a conditioned existence. And that point is coming towards the end, last point he made here. Next. The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of materially conditioned existence. Which means basically saying that the soul is not happy in this world. When he is trapped in this body with this conglomeration of material senses and jnanendriyas and karmendriyas and all these things, is wandering here and there. So his body is like a highly complex CNC machine. You've seen a CNC machine, there are coolants flowing there. Similarly, in our body, some chemicals are flowing. In a CNC machine, you find there are mechanical parts, there are electronic parts, there are computer parts, there is also some chemicals flowing. Similarly, in this body, all the engineering is present in this human body. There is mechanical engineering, there is chemical engineering, there is electronics engineering, electrical engineering. Everything can be studied from this body. Like when chemicals are secreting, there are electrochemical distinct signals are going to the brain. Everything is there. And who are we? The operator of this machine, sitting inside, in the region of the heart. So, but we are not independent, that's the problem. You cannot just drop the machine and go away. I am bored with this machine. That Prabhupada explains in 7.14, how we are sitting in this machine and trying to enjoy the world, and we are unable to get rid of it because it is controlled by the divine energy. We are trapped. So that's why he is saying here, the spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of materially conditioned existence. So we become dissatisfied in this world. That's the difference between spirit and matter. There are some less intelligent arguments that matter develops the power of seeing and moving as a certain organic development. But such an argument cannot be accepted, because there is no experimental evidence that matter has anywhere produced a living entity. Trust no future, however pleasant. Idle talks regarding future development of matter into spirit are actually foolish, because no matter has ever developed the power of seeing or moving in any part of the world. Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities. And this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. This is not a new theory proposed by Darwin or Dawkins, that the spirit and that the living forms have come from dead matter. It is not a new theory. Long before, even Vaibhashikas, if you see the theory, there is an old bogus theory of the atheists in the olden times. The theory says that if you take a bopla and if you take a wire, say steel wire, and if you take a stick, individually they have no life, but when you combine them, you can make a veena kind of thing, stringed instrument, tung 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 tung, can play, it'll produce sound, isn't it? Similarly, they say when matter is independent, of course it has no life, but a combination of matter gradually can bring forth life. That kind of theory is there. Although they had proposed the theory, nobody has any proof that a living being has come by combination of matter or synthesizing matter or developing matter, life has ever come. There is no experience anywhere. In fact, today medical science is so advanced that you can take a human body and take out all the elements in a human body and keep them in separate flasks and then again recombine them. You can do that. It is possible. You can again synthesize them. But the only thing missing will be life. In fact, one scientist, Meg Grigori, he says scientists have even imitated the semen. The semen that is there from male body that is imitated by scientists, they have produced something very similar. And the same chemical combination, whatever the semen contains, exactly the same. And they try to utilize it to find out whether life can be produced through that. Along with it, they try to give a charge of electricity also. So the scientists found out, they said, we found that exactly the semen and the artificial semen created, both of them had the same chemical structure, format, everything looked the same. Only thing is, the scientists found the life escaping out of their hands. He says, you can imitate, but the life is different from matter. That is why when his His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj was a student in Illinois University. One scientist had come and given a big presentation on how the life comes from matter. In the middle of his lecture, Maharaj raised his hand and asked a question. Last a couple of hours you have been speaking about how life comes from matter. My dear sir, if I give you all these chemicals, can you produce life from these chemicals? The scientist, that's the first time somebody asked him such a question. He thought for a while and said, "That I cannot say," he said. When Bhakti Swarup Damodaraj came back and told Prabhupada, Prabhupada was so happy, was ecstatic. In many, many lectures, Prabhupada quoted it, that my student went and asked his scientist, he challenged him. So, we can see that from our own experience, life always comes from life. There is Udbija, Shvedaja, Andaja, Jarayuja. These are the ways the life forms come. Udbija means you sow a seed and then it germinates and the tree comes. Then there is Andaja from the eggs, Jarayuja, like we all are Jarayuja, we are born in the yoni. Shvedaja, from a living body, when the sweat comes, from that the bed bugs come. So you will find you need a living body to produce a living body. Even the modern day cloning, people think cloning is a very great breakthrough, but cloning is not made from some table or chair. Cloning is made from a living body. You take cells from a living body, take out the nucleus, and take another cell from female body, take out nucleus, and impregnate this into that, and put it in the yoni of a surrogate mother's. And so you'll find, actually, without a living body, you cannot produce life. So Prabhupada is concluding here. Clearly we can show that living thing and matter, these two are two distinct things. It's not that matter gradually develops over a period of time and becomes a living body. Suddenly, it's foolishness. Actually, the scientists sometimes use tricks to cheat the gullible masses. For example, say you have an amplifier, this black amplifier. It's lying here in our temple hall for a long time. Say if a scientist says, because this has been here for a million years, gradually one day suddenly it became an elephant. And somebody may ask, how can it become an elephant? Look at the color, this is also black, elephant is also black. But elephant has a tail. No, it has also got a wire, you see. So that became a tail, if somebody says. This is what scientists say. They use trick to show millions of years. They say, because it was there for millions of years, it must have come like that. But other scientists question them. It has been always dead. We never see it living. How it became living? Because the period is too long, you know. It must have become living or something like that. Crazy, huh? This kind of bogus ideas are floated. That's why Prabhupada is saying, trust no future. Because millions of years have passed. Nobody has shown one living being coming from dead matter till now. And people have spoken atheistic theories in the past, and they are speaking now, and they will continue to speak in future also for the millions of years to come. But there is a clear-cut difference between Jad and Chetan, between living and non-living. Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities. And this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. Now we come to the point that the things which are seen by little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as user or director of the intelligence. Intelligence gives one direction, like some higher authority. And the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man. And so a living being is dependent on intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence, and this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority, who is present and residing within every individual living being, is the super self. Now, in our system, we all have intelligence, we have experience. For example, intelligence goes by reason, and our heart goes by emotion. Often emotion is associated with quick pleasures, flickering pleasures, immediate conveniences, what I like. These are all arising from mind. But the intelligence goes by reason. What is right? What is wrong? What is beneficial? What is not beneficial? What will bring long-term happiness? What may give quick happiness? So intelligence is able to discriminate. So to evaluate, to discriminate, make decisions, intelligence has the ability. Now, intelligence guides the mind, and the mind guides the senses, and we all know, we have experience. Can we say that the intelligence always is superior to the mind? It's a question mark. Sometimes the intelligence, being the next door neighbor of the mind, can also become polluted intelligence. Just like sometimes in a house, a husband is supposed to bring resources and money and necessities of the home, and he's supposed to actually take care of wife and children and family in all respects. But sometimes it is seen that a husband is a henpecked husband. So, and the wife may sometimes exploit him. She may loot all the money that he has, and she may tell him to take a big loan also. And in this way, he comes under the control of his wife. Similarly, sometimes the intelligence can come under the control of the mind also. Because the mind is impure, it is likely that the mind may also pollute the intelligence. And the intelligence can get weaker. How? When there is no spiritual input. The intelligence becomes weaker because of material identification. That is called as Gramya Buddhi in Bhagavatam. In many places you find the word Gramya Buddhi. And Gramya Buddhi means materialistic intelligence. So when one has a materialistic intelligence, an impure mind, unengaged senses, the combination of these three can create a havoc for the living entity. So in this way, such a impure intelligence actually cannot guide the mind in one sense. He is actually guided by the mind. But here Baba is explaining, beyond that impure intelligence, there is a pure intelligence. Who is that? The super soul. And we all can see what we call as conscience. The tendency of the mind is always to put pleasure before conscience. And the tendency of a pure soul is always to put pure intelligence before pleasure. Always. So, when we put pleasure before conscience, then we feel guilt. What we call as guilt. Because the conscience speaks, this is not correct. Don't do it. This will not bring you any good. We get a kind of warning. So we have many voices coming from inside us. Mind is giving a voice. Come on, go ahead, enjoy. Forget about everything. Who has seen tomorrow? Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? Who has seen rebirth? This way mind may be screaming. And if the intelligence has some purity associated with it, intelligence may guide, but the pure intelligence always tells the right thing. That is the super soul. That is why Prabhupada is saying here. This is how Prabhupada is proving the super soul in this, mathematically. He's bringing. There is a super soul which always guides. So the super soul externally becomes as, is internally as Chaitya Guru, and externally he comes as spiritual master. And he's guiding from within and without. Both ways. So the guru is one who is supposed to tell the disciple what the truth is. Guru is not supposed to flatter the disciple. Rather, the guru is supposed to tell the disciple the same truth what the super soul is telling from within the heart. He is supposed to guide. So, here Prabhupada is explaining about the super self in the Puranjana Upakhyan. There is a section towards the end, you will find there was a great king called as Malayadvaja. So, for Malayadvaja, he was married to a queen, Vaidarbhi, This analogy of Malayadvaja and Vaidarbhi is very important for sadhaka devotees, practicing devotees. Although Puranjana Upakhyan pastime is very long, wounded, with lot of complicated allegorical examples and analogies. Sometimes devotees read a few pages and get frightened. But this section is especially very, very important for devotees. Because the Malayadvaja represents a spiritual master. And Vaidarbhi represents the disciple. So Malaya means mountains. Dvaja means flag. So Malayadvaja means a person whose spiritual life is as stable as a mountain. And the flag flying, that represents that he has already conquered all kinds of bogus philosophies. Like Nirvisheshvad, Mayavad, Shunyavad, and all kinds of vad. And his flag is unfurling and unfluttering, and it is straight and it is very high. So that is the name of Malayadvaja. Malayadvaja means he was a pure devotee. And he had achieved a very very, very exalted position. He had defeated all sorts of philosophies and everything. So this king, in his later years, he handed over all the charge of his kingdom, divided amongst all his sons, the whole kingdom, and then he retired to forest. So what this means, a guru should train and educate the disciples, and when they become elevated, and when they go out preaching, and they expand the mission of Krishna consciousness in all directions, then a guru should withdraw from his engagements and go for retirement for Nirjan Bhajan, which means silent meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also should write books for the welfare of the suffering people of the world. He should do these two things, it is said. That's what is the meaning of Malayadvaja retiring. And Vaidarbhi, his wife, she also goes with him. The meaning of that is that some of the advanced senior disciples of the guru also should accompany him when he goes for such Nirjan Bhajan and simply render service to him by being in his company. And also absorb some of his Krishna conscious waves that he is exuding from his body. Because a person who is very exalted naturally exudes Krishna consciousness naturally. So the advanced disciples should actually observe a Vaishnava by being in his association and rendering service to him. And so that they can take in some part of it, and then when they come back, then they will also be able to do something valuable to the world. That kind of seva one should do. And when Malayadvaja went like that, he started performing severe austerities. He went to the holy rivers like Tamraparani and other rivers, Chandravas, and he took a bath in the holy rivers, and he externally also became purified, internally also became purified. And he performed a severe penances by eating only roots and fruits and leaves and bulbs, and the kind of very, very simple foods, because of which his body became very skinny and emaciated. At the same time, he also conquered all his senses and the mind by severe austerities. And after having conquered the senses and mind, he engaged it all in the service of the Supreme Lord. Actually, he performed these things. Why? Because the mind and senses are generally in this world in an agitated condition. They are constantly, every one of the senses are looking for the corresponding sense objects, like the eyes and ears and nose and everything. So he withdrew the senses and the sense objects by living a very austere life and then engaging all of them in Krishna service. So in this way it is said, when he achieved more and more and more and more purification, a particular stage came, at that time he sees Paramatma. There you find this. When he saw the super soul, Lord in the heart, then what happened to him? All the knowledge of all the scriptures from all angles of vision were revealed to him. And there was nothing more to be known. Everything was revealed to him. And besides that, he became completely satisfied. He did not maintain any separate interest from the Lord. Sarvarambha parityagi, yomad bhakta samay priya. Krishna also says that. Same thing he did. He gave up all the activities which involve some separate interest from the Lord. We gave up all those activities. And his consciousness became one with the Lord. Which means the Lord has no material activity to do. Similarly, we also have no material activity to do. So his consciousness became merged in the remembrance of the Lord, and he became, that is actually a very, very elevated position. He achieved that stage. And then Vaidarbhi, what she did, being his wife, she also took a very austere life. She didn't apply any oil or anything to the hair, so she had matted hair. She also wore torn and old clothes and performed a severe asceticism along with him, eating very little and the same way that he was eating. So she also became very emaciated, and she also performed devotion service, being guided by him. And then at one point of time, and in fact it is said, although she was right next to him, her mind was completely unagitated, like a flame in a windless place. She was completely, there was no karma, no lust, or no mental attachment at all. She was attached to him only purely spiritually. And she was entering service to him. Constantly entering service. At one point of time, when she was massaging his feet, she found it was cold. And he had left the body. And she wept very loudly. So, he says that the meaning of this is, your disciple should see the purity of the spiritual master and the glory of the spiritual master, greatness of the spiritual master, and have great admiration for it. Actually, just as a worm always keeps remembering the fly who comes and stings him time to time, and the worm also becomes a fly. In the same manner, Prahlad Maharaj said, Kritvatma sat surarishina bhagavan grihita soham katam nivisrijeta vabhritya seva. In that verse, Prahlad says, my dear Lord, my spiritual master Narada made me exactly like himself. He says, not out of pride, but he is saying out of desire to glorify his spiritual master. Although evam janam nipatitam prabhavahi kupi, although I was very fallen in a deep dark well, he uplifted me and made me just like himself. In the same manner, the disciple should observe the purity and sincerity of the spiritual master's execution of devotional service. And then when spiritual master leaves, just as she cried loudly, one should cry very loudly. Why? Because what did she lament? She said, oh my dear Lord, the whole world is infested with rogues and thieves who always exploit the innocent public. Now that you are gone, what will happen to this world? Like that she was weeping. So what is the meaning of this? It is said when Acharya comes, he brings order. When Acharya leaves, there is chaos. Why? Because Acharya is one who gives a very great support to the world by living a very great example of Krishna consciousness, constantly exhibiting Krishna consciousness. So when Acharya leaves, what happens? Many kinds of rogues and bogus swamis in the disguise of a sadhu, they come and they teach many unauthorized literatures and teachings, and they misguide the public and they take them in the wrong direction, because of which everyone is ultimately plunged into suffering. So a disciple should cry, my dear spiritual master, you had such a potency, you had such a greatness, that you were actually, that is, the Malaya Dwaja means your flag was flying, you defeated all the philosophies. Now I am so weak hearted, Shakti Buddhi Hina, Amiyatidina, Koramore Atmasata. I have no Shakti, I have no Buddhi, I have no ability. In your absence, how this whole world is going to flourish in Krishna consciousness? Now, without you, I am broken hearted and I have no guidance, and I have no meaning of my existence. And besides me suffering, I am also seeing that the whole world is suffering. So, this is the meaning of that. And then, she constantly was sobbing and weeping loudly and preparing a funeral pyre for him, Malaya Dwaja, and placed the body of Malaya Dwaja, and the body was burnt. So she prepared in her mind to enter into the fire. So the meaning of that is, a disciple should not want to live in this material world without the presence of the spiritual master. A disciple should be ready to die with the spiritual master. Why? Because Shunyaitam Jagat Sarvam, Govinda virahaname. In this world, if there is no Krishna, there is no meaning to living in this world. In the same manner, spiritual master is one who shows us Krishna. If he is not there, how am I going to see Krishna? If I cannot see Krishna, then what is the meaning of my living? Better I also go along with them. A disciple should be prepared. So disciple can do two things. Either die with the spiritual master and attain the same destination as him, just like a wife attains the same destination as a husband, or live in this world only for the purpose of spiritual master's instructions, having no other goal in mind. Live only for his sake, to do the same work what he did. Then a disciple's life has some meaning, he can live. So, at that time, when she is standing there, you know, with her eyes full of brimming with tears, and she's in a confused state, at that time a Brahmana appears there. And the Brahmana says, the Brahmana is a friend of the Malayadvaja. He appears and he's asking, why there be? What happened? And she's saying that, you know, my husband has died. And I am left all alone. And I am very confused about my duty. She's saying. And Prabhupada writes that it's the same way the living entity also in this world is confused about his duties. He doesn't know how to progress in Krishna consciousness. What is right? What is wrong? That is why those who can help us to make the right decision in our life, especially leading us to Krishna, they are most valuable for us. They are our saviors. Because even all of us have been wandering in our lives, not knowing which direction to go. In fact, Narada later on, to Prachana Parishad, he gives a wonderful example. He says the living entity in this world is exactly like a hungry dog who is wandering from one place to another place, you know, putting his tongue outside. He doesn't know, he's very hungry. Sometimes he goes to your home thinking, will they give me some chapati? They take a stone and throw at him. And he runs away from there, screaming. Another place they may give him some food. Similarly, the living entity is compared to a hungry dog who goes from one species to another species. Narada says sometimes he gets a one-legged body. Which is the body? Ghost. Sometimes he gets a two-legged body. The human being. Sometimes he gets a three-legged body, he says. What is it? Old man. He has a stick also. Sometimes he gets a four-legged body. Or sometimes he gets a many-legged body, like a millipede. Sometimes he gets a no-legged body, like a snake. So he says that living entity takes on different kinds of these bodies, birth after birth after birth, running from one place to another, trying to enjoy his mind and senses, not knowing that this will not give him happiness. Struggles, it's a tremendous struggle. So here we find why they'll be confused. And the Brahmana tells her, don't you know who I am? He says, he's the Sarvajna or the Super Soul, coming as a Brahmana. And that Prabhupada says, why he is coming as a Brahmana? Unless one is very, very advanced in spiritual life, one will not be able to see the Super Soul directly. So the Super Soul comes in the form of a Brahmana, or either be. At the same time, even if one is not very advanced in spiritual life, one should know that the instructions of the spiritual master, if one makes that as the life and soul, it is tantamount to seeing the Lord face to face. There is no difference. If one has taken the instructions of the spiritual master very seriously and applying one's life, in one's life, that is as good as seeing the Super Soul directly. Prabhupada writes there. So then the Brahmana introduces himself. He says that actually, you and I, we both are like two swans in the region of the heart. The body. And we have been away from the spiritual world for a long period of time. In fact, you have occasionally turned towards me for some help or some guidance. But when you turned away from me, you became totally materialistic. He says, when the soul turns away from the Super Soul, he becomes totally materialistic. He wanders in this world, here and there in different species, struggling. Sometimes you find a cat in the kitchen, you will find sometimes a cat gets a jute ball, you know, a ball of jute, and he tries to, tries to unwind it. In the course of doing that, the jute ball gets all around his neck, in his hands, and he's, you know, he's falling on the ground, rotating all over his body. There is jute ball. You've seen that? And he's not able to escape, and he's running here and there. Jute ball also runs along with him, wherever he goes. You'll see that. Similarly, the living entity, when he tries to exploit matter, dhanam janam sundaram, when one tries to exploit, then one gets entangled. And the more one tries to run away also, the material energy chases. Of course, that chases because of one's attachments. In this way, one gets thoroughly entangled in this world. And when one turns to Lord again, then one becomes enlightened again. So the super soul told him that this material world is not your place. And he said, all the bodily relationships and everything are temporary. Your real connection is to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he gives him that enlightenment. Gives Vaidarbhi that enlightenment. You find that. So, in fact, when we say Guru, who is Guru? The Shabda Brahma manifests through the medium of Guru. The Guru is actually speaking the same things what Krishna wants us to hear. And whatever Super Soul wants to say, the Super Soul is speaking through the lips of the Guru. That's why Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittite Koriya, I can say. He speaks through the special master's mouth. Then one becomes awakened. So, in the same manner as we discussed about Vaidarbhi now, when we are practicing Krishna consciousness, it is said in Bhagavatam that one should get awakened. What is the meaning of awakening? Sometimes when one is sleeping, there is a very disturbing dream in the middle of the night. You feel that you are in a forest, you are hearing the sounds of tigers and lions and elephants. Huge sounds you hear, and you don't know which way to go. If you go that way, if the lion comes, you don't know. And you're walking, suddenly a tiger chases after you. And you ran. Very disturbing dream. Sometimes devotees have experienced, sometimes the body is sweating and they're waving their hands and legs. You feel you are running. You're moving the hands and legs in the bed only, but you're not running anywhere. And we are sweating, so much of fear. What is the best way to get out of that suffering? Just to wake up. That's all. We have to get awakened, that's all. Similarly, all the trouble and trial of this world will come to a naught, will come to a zero when we get awakened in Krishna consciousness. That's why the first benefit of the Bhakti Yoga is Kleshagni. Even in a very early stage, then Kleshagni, then Shubhada, then Moksha Lagutakrit, Sudurlabha, one gradually progresses like that. So, one should be awakened. When we are talking about the Lord and the heart, we theoretically know it. Upadrishta, Anumanta, Chabarta, Bhokta, Maheshwara. He is the person who is the director, he is the permitter, he is the sanctioner. In fact, to the degree we read this knowledge, assimilate this knowledge, and try to apply it, we will also see that not only I am guided by the Super Soul, every living being is guided by the Super Soul. In fact, Super Soul has two roles. One is, he sanctions our demands or pleasures, whatever we want to enjoy in this world. Like Prabhupada gives the example of how sometimes a master catches a dog with a leash and he's taking it outside. A dog may want to, you know, lick some bone, some dirty thing. Master may hold the leash and allow him sometimes. Similarly, the Super Soul allows us limited freedom to enjoy or suffer the things of this material world. Sometimes we go in one direction, other times we go in another direction, like that. Prabhupada says, that is why the Super Soul, our relationship with Super Soul is not the ultimate, Prabhupada says. Why? Because Super Soul is like order supplier. Like you ask something and he provides you the facility. And most religious people worldwide in most religions are satisfied with such a relationship. I'll go to God, I'll make a demand. When he fulfills it, he's a good God. If he doesn't fulfill my demand, he's a bad God. People think like that foolishly. But Super Soul is only a partial representation. It's a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, spiritual world. So, but he comes to this world to escort the living being. Because without the escorting of the Super Soul, one cannot know anything. One will be completely ignorant. One cannot do anything on one's own in this world. So, as I was telling about the conscience, actually when we pay attention to conscience or the voice of the super soul and we respect it and we value it, then we will hear that sound more and more. Yeah, when we read the scriptures, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, we will feel as if Krishna is speaking to us, and Krishna is speaking to me. When Krishna is saying anything to Arjuna, actually we will put ourselves in Arjuna's role, or we will put ourselves in Parikshit's role, Shukadeva Goswami is speaking, or Vidura is speaking to Uddhava, or anybody is speaking like that. Actually the scriptures become alive to the degree we become awakened. Otherwise the book is a book. Book remains a book. It will not become alive for us when we study the scriptures. But when we, like there are devotees who study Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, and their hearts become softened by hearing the wonderful prayers of Prahlad and the mood of Prahlad. And it is so wonderful that one can appreciate it for a long time to come. Probably the entire life, or probably for eternity. One can appreciate some wonderful prayer made by Prahlad or Nagapatnis or anybody like that. So, the presence of Super Soul will become more and more manifest, as Prabhupada said in the beginning of the purport, by appropriate service attitude. When there is appropriate service attitude, then one gets, there is an inner compass, the Super Soul. He gives guidance. Sometimes when we have to make a decision, we make it and then we quickly realize this is a selfish decision I have made, you know, to satisfy myself. And then we go for a better decision. Sometimes we feel we could do even a little more better, which is more difficult for us to achieve. So how does one refine one's consciousness in spiritual life? This is all. Like Raghunath Das Goswami is refining his surrender to Lord Chaitanya more and more in terms of his detachment. In the same manner, the Vaidarbhi was told by the Super Soul that because you always followed your husband, or when the disciple is always following the spiritual master's instructions at all times, when he's giving instruction and never disobeys them, then when the spiritual master is not there, he said, I am here for you. I am the Super Soul. I have come to guide you. So the Super Soul will be there to guide one who has always been following the instructions. Yeah. So in this way, I have only completed half of the purport. Whoever is speaking tomorrow can continue it. So the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Actually, in modern day companies, people are looking for men or boys or girls who will be fully committed to the company, who will work day and night for the company, who will work very hard for the company. They try to give them so many facilities to make them slaves of the company. Many companies try that. So they know that behind the head there is creativity. Behind the head there is skill and everything. But behind the heart is the enthusiasm. So how to get that enthusiasm for them to become loyal to the company? I heard that they tried different systems in America and Japan. But in India, when the company management gurus observed that in India, the disciples are totally loyal to their guru. And we want people like that in our company. Such kind of dedication. That is the desire. Nowadays in management books you will find the Indian system of Gurukula is very much discussed. Because they are looking for people who will be so loyal to the company. But they are so foolish, they do not know one underlying fact, that how a disciple becomes so loyal to the guru? Because the guru awakens the disciple to his ultimate friend who is Super Soul in his own heart. When the guru gives a system of practice and the guru awakens the disciple to the sambandhanyan knowledge, the guru is helping the disciple, first of all, in a preliminary stage to understand his own tendencies. Do I have a Brahminical tendency, or Kshatriya tendency, Vaishya tendency, Shudra tendency in the beginning? And then the guru engages a disciple according to his tendencies. And when the disciple is engaging in the activities for Samsiddhir Haritoshanam, what happens? When Krishna is pleased, Yasmin Tushtam Jagat Tushtam. When Krishna is pleased, the disciple also is pleased. And then while rendering the service, while doing the activities like that, and while studying the Shastra, gradually the disciple advances more and more by chanting the holy name, rendering services, worshipping the deity. And why a disciple becomes a sold out slave of a guru? Because the guru connects the disciple to the eternal friend, the best friend. So the super soul in the heart, a disciple can start feeling the presence of the Lord. Like Krishna says, Dadami buddhi yogam tam, enamam api yantite. I will give you the intelligence. Like you will find in ISKCON also, you know, gurus initiate disciples and they travel worldwide. They are not available all the time. How is it that the disciples get guidance? Sometimes the devotees say, Prabhuji, my counselor is away for, you know, one full month. I am all alone here. You know, he is not guiding me. I used to tell many of the devotees, you are overly dependent. You cannot be so dependent. In our days, you know, when we were young, when we were in the early days, we never had a counselor at all. There was no one called as a counselor. Of course, if you have a counselor, you're fortunate. You have somebody there to right next to guide you. But if one simply follows the instructions given in terms of chanting the holy name, rendering service, studying the Shastra faithfully, one will see that Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam principle can be observed in one's heart. Krishna will guide. And he will give direction from inside. Go here, go there, do this, do that. This is right, this is wrong. And this will help you, this is harmful for you. One gets that guidance. And thus one can see the super soul in one's heart. Of course, dependence on seniors, dependence on guru is very much appreciated. But at the same time, like one devotee was telling his spiritual master, why don't you do something? He said, I am like a child, he said. Spiritual master said, yes, you are a child. It's very good to be like a child, but child should grow up also. Child cannot be like a child always. He said, you have to grow up. So we also have to grow in Krishna consciousness, and one of the aspects of growing is when one faithfully executes the instructions. Like Prabhupada says, there was never a time in my life when my spiritual master was not with me, Prabhupada said. Even when he went to the West and he was preaching, in fulfilling the instructions of his spiritual master. In the same manner, the Lord within the heart will help the devotee, and if the Lord finds that the devotee is unnecessarily becoming proud, as our Janmashtami Prabhu was so beautifully, that deeply entered into my heart when I heard that he did a good sound. So when a devotee becomes proud, then Krishna will give a slap, a loving slap, although it may be painful sometimes, to bring the devotee to the right track. And if a devotee is surrendering, then Krishna will give more and more facility for the devotee to surrender even more, and to do more and more Krishna consciousness. In this way, the super soul is right there. Prabhupada writes in one of his purports that if anybody feels lonely, I think it is in 16.1, Abhayam, Abhayam. Abhayam Sattva Shamsugir. Prabhupada said, one should not feel lonely. Because we are never lonely. We always have our eternal friend just standing by our side. He's constantly watching our activities. Upadishta, Anumanta, all those things he's only doing. Pleasures and pains is sanctioning, and we should not be just demanding that. We should actually seek spiritual help. Actually, we can offer prayers, like, you know, acharyas, they offer prayer to the mind. We can also offer prayer to the super soul, the heart. We can also offer prayers to acharyas. We can offer prayers to the deities. We can offer prayers to devotees. We can offer these prayers and take help. So in this way, by taking help, we can internalize all the principles of Krishna consciousness that we read from the books, and the book will not remain a book anymore. The book will start glowing with the wisdom emanating out of the book and entering our hearts. They will make more sense when we get awakened. So, in that respect, the chanting of the holy name does a very great job. When we chant Hare Krishna every day, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The chanting should be done in a mood of prayer, expressing our inabilities to give up the separate interests and surrender to the will of the Supreme. The chanting should be done with that attitude. If it is done with that attitude, then it will lead us to Namabhas. then in Namabhas chanting is a fast purifier. Otherwise, if we don't chant in Namabhas, if we chant in Namaprad, careless chanting, inattentive chanting, unprayerful chanting, it is not useless, but the progress is very slow. It's like a wet firewood producing smoke and fire together. But one should want to give up. We should always think, we should always looking in our life, am I doing this for my own sense gratification to pamper my mind and senses, or am I doing it for pleasing Krishna and Guru? This question should be a constant question in our heart at every moment. And by asking this question, we will get the answer. And if we are properly motivated, if you are sincere, then the Super Soul will guide. He will tell you, this is right, do like this. And then when we do the right thing, you know, one of the beauty of doing the right thing is, you know, we become more enthusiastic in devotional life when we do the right thing. And Krishna gives us more support, more help from inside. In this way, a devotee can progress towards the Supreme very gradually, but at the same time, properly, without getting sidetracked. Actually, everyday chanting is a great gift for us. A couple of hours of chanting, you know, although the day becomes busy with so many management and this and that, so many things. Thanks to Prabhupada for administering the best of the medicines for this age. There are so many gurus. Like when I went to Vrindavan, I saw this Dandavat Parikrama they were doing. Some people, you know, having some 40, 50 stones and putting the stone and doing Dandavat Parikrama. When I saw, I was shocked. Thank God, if I wasn't that parampara, I must have been in big trouble. To do that Dandavat. Ultimately, to purify the enjoying mentality, ultimately. To give ourselves to Krishna. But it is too much austerity, right? It's very difficult. Of course, there are different gurus who administer different types of medicines for their purifying their disciples. But Prabhupada has given a very sweet medicine which can take us to the highest destination. What Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave, the Keval Ananda Kanda, Prabhupada has given very succinctly, very precisely, briefly, such good instructions, such good literature. When we think of what Prabhupada has given us, and the disciples whom he has produced and left behind when he left the world with us. So our hearts get filled with gratitude, what he has done. Just like I was thinking how Vaidarbhi was crying when Malayadvaja left the world. Although we know we cannot do like what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada was doing miracles. In such a short time he did such a miracle in all over the world. So we should try to do at least 1 millionth of what he did in our life. And that would please him and the previous acharyas. Shri Prabhupada ki, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Thank you very much.